Specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. This specific knowledge is realized by pure devotional service and no other means. Bhagavad Gita 18:55 confirms this. Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yaschasmi tatvatah. Only persons engaged in devotional service can factually know the transcendental position of the Lord. Buddha was considered to be the best among all devotees of that time, and therefore he was directly instructed by the Lord's grace, so that people might take advantage of Buddha's knowledge. After the disappearance of the Lord from the vision of the world, this is one of the reasons why Uddhava was advised to go to Bhadrika Ashram, where the Lord is personally represented by the Narayana deity. One who is transcendentally advanced can gain direct inspiration from the temple deity, and thus the devotee of the Lord always takes shelter of a recognized temple of the Lord. in order to make tangible advancement in transcendental knowledge by the grace of the Lord. So here we have a question: why is it that Uddhava, he is left alone? Why is it he is the only one here? Why did he not go with everyone else? All the other associates, they went. Right? It's mentioned that the direct associates, they went back to Godhead. The demigods went back to the heavenly planets. Because they're devotees, but they wanted to see the opulence, or appreciate the opulence of the heavenly realm. Therefore, then, they go there. The Lord reciprocates whatever it is his one's desire. So, that's not the problem for him. He's very well adjusted to the principle that rasa is natural, and that it doesn't necessarily mean that the taste is happy or ecstatic in that way. So, in reciprocating with the living entities, then if they desire something else other than him, then he fulfills that. Right? Because he'll wait. It's not that it's what he prefers, it's not what makes them necessarily happy, but fulfilling the desire and needs of the living entity is something that he does. That's what it gives him also that pleasure, because they're his. Even though they want to go to the heavenly planets, then he'll make the arrangements. But it's not that that's specifically what makes him happy. He's wants them to come to him. So by going to the heavenly planets, they lose the taste for that. Then it's time well spent. If not, then it just means it'll take a little longer. Right? But Krishna's very patient. So everybody went but Uddhava. So that's the question. Why did everybody else go but Uddhava not go? So then, Krishna gives the answer here that he's the only one that can be trusted with this knowledge of the personality of Godhead, that personal direct knowledge. Anyone else may get veered off into understanding Brahman or understanding Paramatma, and they won't get that fullness of the understanding of the personality of Godhead. So Uddhava, he'll do that. So that's why he was left behind to do this. At the same time, we see is that he went to a temple. And at the temple, then the devotees congregate. At the temple, then so many activities go on in connection with the Lord. At the temple, then one can discuss topics of Krishna consciousness. So then it's recommended that the devotee takes shelter of the temple, because the deity is there, because it's directly the Lord. So then one can interface with the deity that is there. So it's not a lower standard. Temples are normal standard, but it's, the standard is there for the interaction with the Lord, not something else. Right? You interact with the Lord, you interact with his devotees. So that's what is happening. So, so Prabhupada's bringing out, so how to come to this position of Uddhava? That is through devotional service. There's no other process. If you know Krishna, then you know all things. Because Krishna is the essence of anything. Whatever works is Krishna. So, by devotional service is actually the only way you'll know Krishna. Otherwise, you'll gain something. You'll observe. By that observation, if you're clever, you can see some patterns. You can put it together into something. You can come up with some kind of theory of how to endeavor, how to act, that will give you some decent result in the material environment. But it's not that it will necessarily always work, because you've only observed a portion of it, you've only understood a portion of it. But through devotional service, then one perceives the Lord. You perceive the Lord, then you perceive everything. So that is the process given here. Because it's by the Lord's grace. Krishna can't be known. He remains hidden. So one of the things he has fun with, he's organizing everything, but he can stay hidden, right? He's the ultimate in sense control, right? We organize something, we stay hidden. And then sometimes it has to pop out and go, how are you going? You know, someone should say, oh great, nice arrangements and all that. And if they do, you feel inspired to do it next time. If they don't, then you stop, right? But Krishna's, you know, completed his self-control, so he can remain hidden and not have to worry about popping out and stuff like that, because even if he did, he wouldn't recognize him, so, you know, he doesn't bother. So, yeah, so he remains hidden, and in that way, then, we don't necessarily connect what's going on with him. But there's nothing that functions without it. Nothing is going on without it. So it's by his grace we can know him. That's the essential point. He reveals. In other words, when you're interested in him, he comes forward. Prabhupada says he'll take one step, he'll take ten. But the point is this, he didn't say he'll take 10 steps and maybe we'll take one. No, if we take the one, he'll take the 10. This is the relationship between Ashray and Isha. Is the Ashray makes that movement towards, but then it is reciprocated by the Vishai much greater. Krishna always leaves the opportunity to attain to him. He never leaves it so you can't. This idea that God is someone who's unapproachable, he's always very upset, very angry, very disturbed about everything, you know, always just ready to point his finger and send everyone down to hell. That's not his position. If you think that's what he should be, he'll reciprocate if you like that. He'll do that for you. But otherwise, then, it's not of interest to him, this one. Right? Fear is not actually a good standard relationship. The living entity doesn't mind it, because that's his natural position, is fear. Fear and attachment. Attachment because he is energy, so he is dependent. Fear because he's trying to take a position other than that. He's trying to take a position of Krishna, right? Take a position of God. So there's always that fear. So being in that position, then if others have a relation with him of fear, then he thinks it's perfectly normal. And he gets some happiness from that. But Krishna doesn't, because if it's only fear, then why? What's the depth of the relationship? Right? He's, you're thinking, only if I do this, then I'll be safe. Right, so your safeness is based on activities, being inspired by fear. But Krishna is interested that the security is based on affection. It's because of affection for the Lord, and his reciprocating that affection, then you feel secure. So that's a much more important, much deeper relationship. So, because that actually goes both ways. Fear doesn't really go both ways, because somebody is in the state of fear, so he's experiencing the other person's state of fear. But where is the actual reciprocation? Like, it means, in other words, if we're going from the subject to the object, there's a relationship there to the verb. But here the person is actually, his relationship is with fear. That's actually what it's doing. It's not for the person. fear. So the subject is the individual, the object is actually the fear. And then the activity is in between. Does that make sense? And then the other who's receiving the service based on that fear, then the fear is there. So they're receiving that service, but the other person is actually only in a state of existence. So it's not complete. Right? The subject is only existing. It's not actually dynamic. So all that's being done is relieving the fear. Right? Or maintaining the security on which the fear is the basis. Does that make some sense? Or yes, no? We've got better. Does that make sense? So what we're trying to say is that therefore it's not really a solid relationship. Because of that, Krishna's not really interested in that. So this whole thing that, you know, the big guy was there and every moment watching you and every moment I'm ready to, you know, zap you with a thunderbolt or the earth open up and you fall inside a crevice like this. That's not actually what God's interested in. But if you think that's what God is, then he'll find, he'll come like that. Like the demons, they're not interested in God, they're only afraid, so he comes to death. So here, Krishna wants the people to know, and so he leads his devotees, like Uttama, to hear from. Now one may say that, okay, then who is then, Uttama was there then, but who is there now? But the point is Vyasadeva wrote this down, Uttama may be available or not. But what's important is the instruction. Right? So, when we hear from the pages of the Bhagavatam, of the Bhagavad Gita, from the transcendental literature, we're hearing directly from them. Like here, this verse is spoken by the Lord Himself. So that means we're hearing directly from the Lord. Right? You understand? Like you're standing in the window and the sunshine is shining in the window onto you. Even though it's coming through the window, you're receiving the light directly. At the same time, it's there because it's the medium of the window, it's really hard to get the sunlight through the wall. Right? Does that make sense? So it's simultaneously direct, but through the medium of the parampara. So when you study Gita, you're directly in contact with Krishna and Arjuna. Studying the Bhagavatam, you're directly in contact with those persons. When you're reading the works of the Acharyas, you're directly in contact with them. So that's what's the most important, is the instruction, right? Like that. So that's what he was left behind. They didn't say Uddhava had been associating with the Lord, he had touched the Lord personally, therefore he stayed behind to give hugs to everybody so that they can experience that touch of the Lord. They didn't say that anywhere. It said his instructions. That's what is the important thing. So then, that is what we have. So there's no. So if we're connected to that, to the Sampradaya, and we can hear these instructions, then we're getting that benefit. That's the important. So that if someone is staying back to give these instructions, then they can be recorded and they can be given to us. Before it's the same. Many of these stories we hear are going back millions and millions of years. Like you're talking about the some of these pastimes mentioned are from the first Kalpa. Right? So that's the first day of Brahma. Right? We're already in Brahma's 51st year. So they're old. That's why it's called the run. They're old. These are old stories. So, but they don't lose any of the potency just because they happen to be, you know, 150 trillion years old. Right? They don't go out of date. You know, someone may say, oh, well, you know, that was the Prabhupada's time, or that was when he was young, or the time Lord Chaitanya, or 5,000 years ago. So it doesn't apply to today. Well, what about stories that are 150 trillion years old? How does that, you know, that's the thing, is what's real is timeless. That doesn't have any meaning. You know? What doesn't have substance, yes, that's affected by time. And it is a fact. But that which has substance, that is connected to Krishna. That which is instruction of these great personalities, that's timeless. That's not lost. That doesn't reduce at all. It has the potency there, right? The idea is that something becomes dead, right? You call it dead language, a dead this, a dead that, sometimes. But if it's imbued with the chit potency, it's never dead. See, it's like this. Until someone manifests a mood, how do you know how to reciprocate it? Right? You meet somebody, you don't know how to deal. But if they deal with you open formally, you respond formally. They open informally, you can respond informally. So, therefore, it goes by that, but the response is always the greater. You know, that's why things increase, right? You know, like I say, kid A takes kid B's cradle, right? Kid B then, instead of taking back kid A's crayon, or their own crayon, they take the other kid's whole book. Right? Then the other kid then gives them a poke. The other one gives them a punch. So that's just the natural response, is escalation. So if it is done with purity, then you're escalating the actual depth of the rasa. Right? And if you're not, then you're generally escalating sub rasa. You know, fear and chivalry and horror and all those kind of nice, you know, all the secondary rasas. So that's natural. It's whatever someone deals, you respond greater. That's why there's the element of sense control. You know, so it's the response is then appropriate. So something negative you don't need to increase. So you control yourself there, then how much you've done and they'll respond by becoming peaceful. Right? Does that make sense? So you'll see it's they'll do something to you, you respond, you know, much greater than that in peacefulness. Then they'll respond a little bit back with, you know, calming down, and you can respond back and be balanced in their peacefulness. So it's the same principle. Just you reverse it by sense control.
Right, you're talking about the relationship between subject, object, and verb with regards to fear. Can you expand that in a little bit?
You didn't get the subject, object. You understand there? Okay, so the point is this. The object is one through which a result is gotten, right? Because you have a subject and an object, they're connected by a verb, right? But the result's not the object. The result's something other than the object, right? That'll be the data, not the accusative, right? So then, but that relationship goes through that person. So there's an interaction, because one state of existence is dynamic. But in here, it's fear, so you're actually not sure of who you are, your existence. Because at any moment, it could disappear. So all you're trying to do actually is maintain your existence. So externally, it looks the same, because the activity will be projected onto the object, which will then give you the state of security that will be obtained. But you actually don't have a relationship really with, a dynamic relationship with the object. Because you're only trying to maintain your security, which is technically not, it's intransitive. You're maintaining your position of existence. You're not actually interacting for a result. You know what I'm saying? It's very subtle, but the point is pointing out that fear is not really a basis of a relationship. So someone who has a lot of people under them, they would function out of fear. They feel good, but no one else does. You know what I'm saying? They may feel I'm doing well in a position I'm respected. Yes, you're respected, but out of fear, not actually out of fear. They feel your qualities are really something special. You know what I'm saying? So it's different. So Krishna is not interested in that kind of superficial relationship. He's interested in something with substance, where there's actually affection, the exchange of affection. So the result being gotten is, one is inspired by affection, one acts in affection. The result is there, and therefore affection, increasing that affection. And that's there. Is that okay? Classes with Sanskrit analysis. Do you use mathematics? You use simple mathematics. How do you apply grammar to your life? So right now, your subject, right? I'm the object, and the verb is a question, right? With the desire to get the result of an answer. Does that make sense? Pretty direct. Charlie's used complex grammar. It's not actually very complex grammar, but he may be using complex words that have been created by the complexities of grammar. But the point is it's put together is very simple. You only have six kinds of nouns, primary nouns, that are all connected with the verb. Right? So it's actually very simple. Language is quite simple in what it's based on. The variety that's there is quite complex. You know what I'm saying? Problems like reduced, example of putting it to life, reduced down how a man can be successful in life down to two things, sense control and sensitivity. Its application is unlimited. The intelligence is knowing when it's sense control and when it's sensitivity, which is prana. That's the art. So that's where complexity seems to come in. But the science of it is always simple. There's no Vedic science that's complex. It's all very simple. Like Ayurveda, you have mucus, you have bile, and you have air in the body. If they're balanced, there's health. If one goes higher or lower, then it's out of balance, it's out of balance. So therefore, when one goes out, then there's methods to find which one is out and to what degree by the symptoms, right? Or by the pulse. bring it back into balance. But remove that and just put it out of balance and add those things and put it back in balance and keep it in balance. But that's all Ayurveda is doing. It's not doing something more than that. But the subtleties of that, you know, then what is created, what diseases are created from that are, right? So does that make sense? So all the Vedic sciences are actually very, very simple in this way. Like the philosophy is samandhavide vayoja. Right? Relationship, process, and result. That's all there is. Right? And samandha, you have God, the living entity, and material energy in their relationship. Then how do they interact based on that relationship, and what is the result of that relationship? That's it. That's the Upanishads. Right? That's Vedanta. That's Gita. But understanding the subtleties of all that, then that's unlimited. Because Krishna is unlimited. Right? Does that make sense? Krishna is Sachi Ananda. So everything's going to be based on that. But unlimited, that means the manifestations of that Sachi Ananda, their combinations, will be unlimited. Right? Does that make sense? So you have simultaneously, that's God, right? Something so simple, but so unlimitedly sophisticated that there's no way we can comprehend. Does that make sense? So that's the importance of this Chitta Deva Deva Tattva. Is that okay? So if one understands the principle it's working on, it's actually very easy. Then it's a matter of if it's similar to other situations, you can apply a previously experienced or understood detail. But if it's different, then you see the principle, then you have to then carefully, that's where the sensitivity comes, and the sense control, to apply the principle into this new situation. Does that make sense? So, all these complexities are there just to give more of a background on how to apply the science. Does that make sense? So that's all. Let's say, okay, another, take something extremely mundane. You want to, you're racing, you know, a vehicle. So basically they just have a few principles, that's all. You brake before a corner, you accelerate in the corner, and you try to make the corners as straight as possible by starting as far on the outside and cutting as close to the inside and going out to the outside. That's all. Do it as fast as possible without bumping into anybody else or anything. Finish. There isn't anything else. Right? The detail of application of that then is very great. Right? It's a dry road, it's a wet road. It's hot out, it's cold out. You know what I'm saying? So all these things have some. So therefore all these things become more complex because of the world. Is the world, if the energy, manifestation of the energies was also just that simple, then one would get bored pretty quick, you know? Does that make sense? So it's unlimited, therefore there's never really more. Sanskrit principle of sandhi. Okay, well two words join. Okay, so now if two people connect together, is there not an adjustment on their parts? That means if you want to make a relationship with someone else, means you are willing to make adjustments to make that relationship work. You agree to make those relations, those adjustments, the relationship does work. As soon as you don't, then the compound is broken. It becomes two single words, not a compound. That's it. That's, but how those connections are made, that's why there's a variety of sudden. Right? Change of sound, and sound is within the nature of those things. depending upon what it is, you have a P, then then the H goes to an F, it goes to a P. But there's a K, and you just aspirate with no sound. Right? You get a shorty, the sa sa sha sha, then it takes on that. Right? And I think what's the other one? It takes on the TH. If there's an N? Sorry, it takes on a T, it's like the sound of a T. So then you understand the nature of what they are, and then you can see is that therefore this one adjusts here, that one adjusts there. You have a double A, it matches with a single A. Then when it goes together, it's a double A. It's not a triple A. Because there's adjustment that A adjusts. The bigger it has to adjust to accommodate the smaller. You understand? There's nothing that's not directly applicable. It can't be. So it's not a matter of... It's a matter of just finding it. You know what I'm saying? It's not that, oh, this doesn't match, it's not practical. Then better to say that it's not practical means I don't understand how it works. That would be the better, the honest statement. Oh, this is all, it doesn't apply today. There isn't anything in material nature that doesn't apply today. The modern man is doing his best to act completely outside the laws of nature, and the laws of nature are reacting as laws of nature. So you have your ozone hole, your global warming, a whole plethora of other kind of, natural phenomena. It's still material energy, it's acting as material energy, despite modern man's attempt to be free from it. You know what I'm saying? So there's no example in the world that it functions outside of God's creation. Right? The Shastra is there before creation. Creation is based upon the sound vibration of the Shastra, of the Veda. So that means it's going to be Veda. So to make a statement that it doesn't apply now means you don't understand where it came from. Right? If the world's come from the Veda, how can it function other than the Veda? Right? Something that comes from something can't have a quality greater or different from the thing it comes from. That's why we say the jiva can't come from Brahman, or God can't come from Brahman. Right? Because the jiva is such an ananda, Brahman sat. Where did the chit and ananda come from? Right? Sat can't produce chit and ananda. So the soul can't come from the Brahman. He has to come from Bhagavan, who is sat chit ananda. So they'll explain part of it will be given so that you have an idea. By contemplation you can catch, otherwise you're further consulting with the teacher, then more things can be gained. In other words, you're trying to gain enough until such time as then you can function by your own contemplation and by the association of others. That's why a society is important, because different persons will contemplate different aspects of the philosophy, application. So then hearing their understandings, their realizations, then it expands our own purview. So that's the whole advantage. If you stay alone, then you'll stay in your own particular mind, which you might notice enough to make it work nicely, but you might not. So by being in the association, association with others, then the tendency is to hear more. And so that broadens one's perspective. Right? Because otherwise, you thought of it in a way, you looked at it intellectually, you're always trying to simplify it down to something less. But then there'll be something that's contradictory that comes up somewhere else, then how do you accommodate? Because what you already understand has some subtleties to it, that understanding those, you're able to apply it better. Thank you. wanting to be God, but the point is we're never able quite to do it. And in the back of the mind, there is somebody who is. Just like an atheist is always speaking out against God. If there was no God, why would we talk about it?
Right,
why bother? Yeah, why bother? You know, I mean, you know, why would we talk about, you know, a bug sitting in the middle of this room that's not there? Right? It doesn't exist, so why even talk about it? But if it was there, you know, then, you want to make sure that you're like, keep it over the corner, you know, don't disturb it. And during class, you can't go on, you know, it's like that. You have to make sure you can shut off. But it doesn't exist. So therefore, there is an underlying image that it does exist, that God is there. So that's the problem with the moving entity. So that fear is inherent that you're actually doing something you shouldn't be doing. Right? That's kind of, is that a fear? It'll be a bad circumstance. Here means I won't be able to maintain. Someone else will take the position of God. Right? But if it's accepted that I'm servant of God, there's no fear. That's why the Bhagavatam always brings out the element of fearlessness. That means, technically means we be, you know, fully accepted the concept that we're servant, we're not the controller. We may still have some conditioning left over from that, but it's not that we have any doubts about this. We just may not have fully applied it to all aspects of the life, but we're willing to, but just you're unconscious of that. You know, what's still conditioned. Does that make some sense?
I didn't meet that class.
Meaning, for the Madhya Madhikari, then, because being fixed means being fearless. Because you can only be fixed if you are confident that this position is not going to give you trouble. Right? So you're fixed that I am servant of God, and that everything's going to go fine because of that. So one becomes fearless. So that's why the Bhagavatam is always talking about becoming fearless, meaning one should come at least the minimum platform of the Madhya platform, pure devotional service. Then, because the neophyte, because of the stronger identification with the conditioned nature, then there'll be that fear of loss of that identification. But if your identification is that of servant of Krishna, then the secondary conditioned identity is not as important. Certain aspects of it appear to be lost. It's not actually lost. Society where you like to what it is. So, see, there's the gross and there's the sub, right? The gross means karma would be an action was done with the physical body, you know, with the senses, let's say. Then a, a tree, a karmic tree is sprouted, grows, gives, and then gives the fruit, which is also comes in the form of physical, comes as physical, mental is mental, spoken is spoken, right? Verbal is verbal. So, that's one thing, right? But actually, if you look at it, karma is not that. That is karma. But actually, karma is based on the desire before that. That's the key. As you see there, karma is really fall down. Right? Because what happens is the devotee. Yeah. Okay, so that's one thing. Okay, so that was one. Another thing is that what are you dealing with? Why should there be a reaction? Right? Physically, you perform something that's incorrect, so you get a physical reaction, an equal physical reaction. Right? It's Newton's third law. You sit under an apple tree again, and an apple will bump you on the head. Right? So every action is an equal reaction. So, why should there be a reaction? What is the purpose of the reaction? Right, you're dealing with dead matter. What is the matter? But why should there be a balance? To keep me?
Structure intact.
To keep the structure intact. Why is the structure there that needs to be kept intact? Correction. But is that correction meaning physical? Right? Okay. Party A has, you know, pinched party B, and now after the judicial authority comes to the conclusion that party B can pinch party A back. So, okay, but Vigas says now it's balanced. But what's the purpose of that? Why balance it? What is the ultimate balance? The ultimate balance is Krishna consciousness, right? In other words, now our desire is to be God. We are trying to correct that desire to be served. So the whole thing is you correct one through the other. If you can't get at the desire directly, you get at it indirectly, right? In other words, the desire is to enjoy. Therefore, the body, mind, and words engage in activities to try to enjoy. Right? So, since we identify with the body, that if a reaction comes to the body, then we might think, I shouldn't enjoy like this. It's a start. The point is, I shouldn't try to be enjoying separately from Krishna. But at least then I shouldn't be enjoying in ways that are improper. Or even if they're proper, why would I make so much difference with joy in things that actually can't give me enjoyment? So then one would conclude intelligently that, but I'm always endeavoring for enjoyment, so that's inherent in my nature. So where do I find the real enjoyment? Rather than, okay, enjoyment's giving me a problem, get rid of enjoyment. No, you won't get rid of that. Because otherwise, if someone's a true Brahmanandi, right, that I'm not interested in enjoyment, why would they call it Brahmananda? Existence, this gives peace. other words, then that external manifestation of karma is only begetting to the desire. Isn't it? Does that make sense? Yes or no? Clear? I mean, very clear? Say again? It's linked, yes, but my point is you're getting at the seed by going through the external, because people don't recognize the seed. Right? It's like saying, I want to be in a position of authority, so therefore I am pushing to become the temple president. Right? But if the temple president isn't actually the point, it's to be in charge. Temple president happens to be a position through which I can express that. Right? So what you're trying to get at is the desire to be in charge. Right? That's the point. So that they have a proper humble attitude. That, okay, if I have ability to manage and there's need for it, then I can manage efficiently. But I'm not managing because I identify as a manager and I have to, like that. You start in that position, that's fine, because you're connecting to Krishna. So you're managing with an attitude, you're doing Krishna, you get purified. But it's not that the overlying thing of trying to correct that false attitude is not going to happen. Right? So in other words, the karma has performed the activity and is going to get the result mechanically. But whether you actually understand or not, and be corrected or not, that remains to be seen. Generally not. Right? Does that make sense? But for the devotee, the karma actually has nothing to do with it. It's been removed. As soon as you chant one Hare Krishna, all your past is gone. It doesn't exist anymore. But the mentality that created it still does. Therefore, if you don't catch it through the philosophy, how are you going to catch it? Right? Through the external. But it's not because of karma. It's because of the residue of desire that Krishna uses the same medicine. Understand? So it looks the same. That's why the devotee can say, it's my karma. But at the same time, we can say the devotee has no karma. Isn't bija considered to be part of karma? See, is okay. So then here would be, this is the actual problem. Because what we're talking about is behind bija is polluted consciousness. Right? Polluted consciousness is I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Right? The controller, that's the fear. That's another synonym of that sphere.
What, how do you define bija?
See, he's taking bija, meaning that you have bija to touch, fula mukha, and karapa in the karma. Because you have the seed, you know, unsprouted, then kutaja means it sprouts. Then you have fula mukha, means the tree is full and ready to give you the fruits. And then karapa means the fruit itself you actually get. So he's taking that that's the root of the karma. But that is the manifestation, the detailed manifestation of the desire to control and enjoy, which particular way. But that is inspired by wanting to be God, wanting to control and enjoy. That is the Vasudeva, the Vasudeva. So that means the living entity is in the transcendental position, but he still wants to be God. He has no specific, mundane way to express it. Right? Only after the Lord, in the universal form, manifests all the ways that you could express the desire to control and enjoy, then the living entity goes and chooses that, or goes back to choices he's made in, you know, from a previous creation. You understand? So here you're looking at that you can actually be transcendental, but still being played with desire, control, and joy. That's polluted consciousness.
It's an issue of living entity becomes the material world by chance or by conscious arrangement, is attracted to one.
victim. I'm the victim here. Why couldn't God have made me devotional like that? That's called internal potency. Right. And then there's external potency, which is dead matter. There's something in between. Right? You have night day, it has to be twilight. You know, so why couldn't the number say, why couldn't Krishna have made the twilight daytime? No, it's twilight. It's not daytime. You know, so it's just part of different energy. So, you know, get over that. So, the living entity, Devadatta, always has the choice. Yeah, Devadatta means it's in between. We're technically the farthest outer line regions of the chit potency. Right? So at the outer line edges, then we're right next to the sunbeam potency, which is its reflection is the material world. Right? Is the one's existence is there's the spiritual, there's the material, right? You know, the mode of ignorance, the mode of existence turns into ignorance. Being part of, technically, the internal potency. But we have the choice. So, that we made the wrong choice, that's our decision. We didn't have to do that.
Prabhupada uses some very simple terms. To explain this initially, he says, well, with Krishna in the spiritual world,
yes.
And, you know, when we leave,
is that potency that allows the material and spiritual to be in the same place at the same time. Right? Because otherwise it's material or it's spiritual. So that potency that can pull the two together and overlap them in the same existence, that's the Tathasta Shakti. The example is given of the soul and the body. Two separate existences overlapping, but connected. So you can see both. We can see spiritual become not not connected with the body, or we become completely absorbed in the body. That's the potency, that's the Tathasta potency. So then, when we apply what Prabhupada says and what we were saying technically, right, means in other words, Prabhupada is explaining it basically through relationship, through the rasa. You know, because then that very easily is assimilated. But then, as one intellectualizes on it, then the tattva starts coming up, then problems come up with it. You know, then the problem comes up, well, how could there be any lust or desire in the spiritual world? But the point is that's what the Tathasta Shakti is, right? Is that's what it does. You have Dhanakasura, who is not known to be in any way, shape, or form a great devotee, right? Completely mundane, is there in Vrindavan, you know, bothering Vrindavan, which is totally transcendental. So that's the Tathasta Shakti. It brings the two realms together at the same place at the same time. In that realm, that's where we can be with Krishna or get distracted by the material energy. So since our position is that of being voluntary, that is where we start. Then in that position, we're with Krishna, but we can choose to not be. So, from what I've heard a few devotees refer to it that there's some either lecture or a conversation, I think, where Prabhupada mentions that 9 out of 10 will take the spiritual and 1 out of 10 is us. The winner is here in the material world. So, most are intelligent, right? But some are not. So then you can be inspired by, you know, how many unlimited living entities are here, so multiply that times 9, that's how many 10, and that's how many went back to God.
Well, that's kind of a derogatory thing, they were not intelligent.
It is derogatory, right?
Confucius created this problem, this pastime, so we see ourselves as
instruments in his pastimes. But do you see that? That's the thing, because then that means you have to function without ego. It means, because Krishna says, it means he gives an indication in the Gita of how that pastime works. It means he gives the most detailed relationship to a yajna. So he is the person, the hotri, the person doing the yajna. He is the fire, right? So that's the subject and the object there. He is the ghee. He is the mantra, right? He is the ritual. He is the result that will come from that yajna, right? So there's nothing actually dynamic in the whole thing that's not him. So we can take part in this pastime, but that is the second best. Since we're here, we take part in the pastime here. You know, I mean, point is we should have been taking part in the pastime. So if you're taking part in the primary pastime, why take part in the secondary? Right? Seeing because our natural position is to take part in the primary. So it's just that we didn't have that much drive to take part in the primary. It's interesting, it's nice. Spiritual world is a great place, you know. No birth, death, old age, you know, obviously something exists. And so the niceness of it we're impressed by. So then we get involved in that externalness of the niceness of the spiritual world. That distracts us from Krishna. The focus on him as a person and that natural affection towards him. So then, just with practice, being neutral naturally turns into inimical. You can't remain neutral in a relationship. You have to do something to either make it come together or it will just fade away. So then one becomes more and more distracted. So then at the end of that pastime, then we come as Brahma. And then there, because we see the Lord, we could at that point realize and go back, or we could not. And so quite a few could not. But it's not that they don't. So you come in there, that's the first. The next is like Prajapatis. After that, the great sages. And then after that, it's potpourri. It's like a... yeah. Plenty of salt for all the cuts and wounds. So they don't contradict. Because that is why the analogy of absolute is given as iron and fire. This Christian concept, or let's say Protestant concept, we may be so bold, that absolute means no flaw in any way, shape, or form. That we can identify according to our definitions of dharma, artakama, and moksha to have any fault. That's absolute. So then you end up with this formula of 100% or nothing. Right? So it creates a problem there, because then it doesn't work very well. Well, Prabhupada gives the analogy of absolute meaning iron and fire. Because then the jiva, being in the fire of the internal potency, is as good as, and it acts like fire. Therefore, one goes back to Godhead, and one is in the fire of the internal potency, and there's no distinction made between the jiva and the internal potency. The locus of being, there's no distinction made, because one's in the fire anyway. And even if you look at it, the jivas are anyway expansions of the internal potency, so there's no difference also there. So then, you know, from either way you can look, but that's why that example is so important, and it applies even in our daily Krishna consciousness. Means someone's in the fire of Krishna consciousness, they get distracted and they get into Maya. But as soon as they get back into Krishna consciousness, the fire of Krishna consciousness makes them absolute again. This idea that even in the fire, the iron is still going to act like iron by the, you know, modern moralists. It's not logical. One would have to say that morality is as strong as, if not stronger, than bhakti. because you can be tainted for a lifetime because of something that one did wrong. But that's, you know, that's, you could say that's an okay platform if you were in Satya Yuga, but in Kali Yuga, you know, it's the losers are the ones that are in Kali Yuga. It's like no one's not done something and disappeared here unless one's an acharya or something. So that would be a good place to start from anyway, because then nobody would be able to do anything, right? Like that. So it's not a good platform to start from. So it has its influence, it may have its social implications, but the spiritual it doesn't. And socially you have to watch, means there are certain things that are there that are watched. You know, someone who is killing women and children, who has killed a friend, you know, there's persons that deserve respect, or yeah, at least respect, trust, protection, and one has it, then that person after mundane atonement is still watched. But what he has done before is never referred to again. Right? That's the rule. Is whatever one's done, once one's done atonement, no one who's following the Vedic culture will ever refer to it again, unless it comes up. Like Rama Harshana Sutta, he's a Sutta from mixed caste. Not one sage in Lamishwanya brought that up. I mean, so many were there being pure caste. You know, here's a mixed caste person sitting on the Nyasa, not speaking to them. They didn't bring it up until he disrespected Balaram. Then they go, well, what do you expect from a mixed caste? So, but until that point, they didn't bring it up. So, unless something manifests again, it will never be brought up by an honest person. Like that, because it's understood that the atonement does clear the karma, and that's your problem. Oh, they're sinful. No. Now they're purified of that sin. The desire may not have gone, but that can only be removed by devotional service. So that means the real atonement is devotional service. That's what the sixth canto is all about. Right here you have Ajamian, high-grade Brahmin family, married to a young, you know, beautiful, dedicated wife. He's giving support to his mother and father. And he goes off and lives with a prostitute. And to maintain the prostitute, he does all every sin you can imagine to get the money. And not only that, the pastime and, you know, discussion of that of calling out the name of Narayan is when he's 88 years old. No, more than 88. Narayan was born when he was 88. Right? 88-year-old man still had the kids with his prostitute. Right? Got to give him some credit, but the point is, it's
very funny.
Yeah, the point is it's there. Is that, and then he takes up the process of just chanting the holy name once, and he's freed from all that, much to the incredulousness of the moralists. How is it possible? That's why this is there. Means seventh canto, you go into pure devotional service. And you can't walk through the door of pure devotional service wearing the hat of morality. Right? This doesn't mean that the devotee is not moral. But morality that is separate from devotional service, that's not based on the support of devotional service, is rejected by the acharyas just in the introductions of their books. Right? Otherwise, how do you discuss, you know, some black guy off with a white girl dancing in the middle of the night and she's already married? Not only that, he's not happy with one, there's millions of them. You know, it's a big problem for moralists. That's why they always, just first of all, in the introduction, if you're a moralist, you know, close the book. That's when you call the phone number. If you're a solicitor, please hang up. Right? So it's like, if you're a moralist, please close the book and walk off. You know, like that. Just, you only make offenses, you only make it worse for yourself. But if you understand morality is in support of dharma, or religion, and religion is for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, not artha, then you actually understand morality and practice it properly. Otherwise, it would be out of balance. Because morality never overcomes dharma. It's always the other way around. upadharma. Right? He is, in other words, performing the duties of your brother ashram. Right? That's the dharma. To do that, then, you know, Kshatriya must be chivalrous, or he must be charitable, or must have all these nice qualities. So, that's upadharma. Right? That's the whole point. So, when one elevates upadharma to the platform of dharma, or even worse, to the platform of bhakti, then there's a big problem. So it has to be seen in this proper place. So, in conclusion here, absolute means that jiva has the natural opportunity to be in his natural position, to be in the fire of the eternal consciousness. Actually, he is chit potency. But there's a distinction made there that there's a difference in flavor that we can choose. We get some specialness of the flavor. It's just like you have a string, you make string on your musical instrument. Then you have sympathetic strings. So the sympathetic string can be tuned to any note, but you choose to tune it to the note of the main string. So the main string plays, and then it responds to that, it echoes that. So that's its natural position. In other words, when they don't play the main strings, the sympathetic strings make the sound, so it doesn't. So that's what we do, is we add to the already pleasure Krishna's given, or getting from the internal thoughts. And then so you have to be remembered in the mind that has all these great sun echoes. So that's what we do. Yeah. So then it becomes very aggressive. And that means we're in the fire up. That's what means that string is in the same residence of the main string, so that's why we respond at that point. That works very, very nicely. The jiva cannot change its mentality.
Anything that has subtlety of commonality will be dropped.
because they haven't been able to tell this difference. It wasn't strong enough. So he just goes in there, okay, you've been given the opportunity to understand it in the subtext. So now we're just going to come in and just do logic, just destroy any pattern that we have of the universe. You know, and it's two, it's you, it's God, us. You know, so that's what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? One might say, well, in the commentaries he speaks badly about Ramanuja. That's only because the sun is attached to that, and because of that's not getting the right result. You know, because otherwise the impersonalist might be Ramanuja, see, oh, well, see, he's doing this special oneness, so possibly oneness is there. And, like, I remember, you know, you first meet the devotees, right? And then they give you a BTG. And on the back of the BTG is a picture of the Panchatattva. Right? And in the Panchatattva, Srivas has a shaved head. You see, you know, the others have long hair. So maybe you could be a hard Krishna without shaving your head. Okay? You know, until the Dhamma command is informed to you otherwise. Does that make sense?
Back to the discussion of subject, object, and verb. I'm trying to understand what point emerges from the point of this particular methodology that Krishna doesn't want a fearful relationship because that relationship is static and he would prefer a dynamic relationship. So what does it mean that he wants a dynamic relationship? What's an example?
What's an example? It's just like this. Krishna is swimming. Okay? So, technically speaking here, being is a verb, right? A state of existence. So swimming, so in other words, swimming is Krishna exists. But what's accomplished? It's just something you do yourself. It's nice. And nothing's accomplished. There's no specific relationship with anyone. So when there's relationship, so it may be nice, but when there's relationship, it expands. Does that make sense? So whatever pleasure is there, you exist, but you, by adding others to it, then you expand that pleasure. Does that make sense? Like that. So the point is you have from intransitive, then you have, you have transitive, right? But you also have then even more dynamic and more intimate is di-transitive. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Where you accomplish two things at once. An example is given of milking the cow. Right? So you get milk out of the cow, and you also then, you know, have a bucket of milk. Right? You know, so two things are happening. One, you win the battle and you win the war. You win the battle, you win this war, and then you gain a kingdom. So you defeated the others in battle, and in doing that, you get the kingdom's hand next. So you don't want the thing to go out of the object. It is the secondary connection to the verb. So you want to keep the relationship. Rather than just put it, you know, that as another thing. You're keeping them together. So this is just, in other words, because the point is grammar is the rules concerning communication. How to actually communicate what you feel, you know, what you want to express. So then language then becomes that medium. So the medium has to directly represent what is to be communicated. So that's why in Sanskrit it makes sense that all directly communicated grammar is applicable or not. Instead of grammar, you use grammar to, you know, run your life, you know, or find your life, you know, understand what you should do in your life. You know how to connect it. Because the grammar is only the rules of the expression of what you want to be doing. Krishna is performing activity with Radha. with assistance, that's the instrumental. It will give a particular result. The cause of this particular pastime, there is some reason to have it. And it's happening at a particular place. You understand? So anything you want to describe in the pastime of the Lord, then language can communicate that. Does that make sense? So that's why the grammar is there, just so that we understand that we're properly expressing the, you know, the main form of all these pastimes of the Lord. It's not separate. That's why grammar nowadays is such a abomination, because it's not actually connected with the communication, you know. They kind of try to, but it's not really, you know, it'll be some tools, but what exactly is science that is not understood, and relationship's not there. You know, you want to say it's colorful, so you add this adjective there. But the point is why you want to add that, that's not explained. Grammarians don't deal with that. Take it from the rock. That's why our acharyas are great poets, but great grammarians, because grammar is alive for them. It's communication. It's not rules. Am is another, you know, how you say, in that category of being.
Yeah.
You know, so it's neutral, right? Being is intransitive. Nothing's happening. No result is coming. You can say, I am recognized. My goal was to be recognized, but that means my goal is to exist in the stage of recognition. All it is I want to exist. I have to exist, or I do exist. But I want a particular kind of existence. But just because you have existence doesn't mean you have a relationship. I exist, okay. I made it, I'm the CEO of the company. I've worked for the last 30 years, or 40 or 50, whatever it is. And I've made it in everything, but I don't know why. My wife has just filed for a divorce. My son's just moved out on me. And my daughter just eloped with, you know, some other folks. So, he did it. He is the CEO. You know, but in there he was, he's not is the father or is the husband. Right? So all it is because there was nothing dynamic happening there. You know, so that's the whole thing. Is you can describe relationships through grammar, through language. Because language only expresses relationship. Philosophy expresses relationship. It's the science of the relationship. Right? So it makes sense. So grammar is how you're going to express it. Language is how you're going to express it.
So what does it mean when you're saying he feels like his existence is being threatened, that he's worried he doesn't exist?
It means you have to exist to do something. Right, something that doesn't exist doesn't do anything. So, therefore, wanting to be happy means you have to interact with something. So you have to exist first. But because we're trying to be God, we put so much emphasis on the existence part. Right? Because the point is the feminine exists because of the connection with the masculine. Right? That Shakti exists because it's connected to the Shakti Man. Right? Electricity exists because it's connected to the powerhouse. The powerhouse turns off, it's not there. So here you have electricity trying to say it's not connected to the powerhouse, so it's always trying to establish its own separate existence. Like that. You understand? So Krishna consciousness is simply the electricity accepts that it's connected to the powerhouse. Then so many things happen. But otherwise, much of our distress is because of a disturbance to our identity. Yeah, false ego. And then in some way that false ego is being disturbed. I mean, It's not in a position of its falseness is not complete. Right? I am the manager, and as we find out that someone else is trying to get our position. So that means my existence as a manager comes into question. Therefore, my relationship with everybody as the manager comes into question. Therefore, my whole existence comes into question. You understand that word? So generally, you'll find that's why the pure devotees don't care what happens, and those who are not do. That's all. Yudhishthira, he could be the emperor of the world or the king of one village. It didn't matter. Like that. Opportunity is there to be the emperor, can do it. Because he has the qualifications, he can do it. But if it's not what's available, he doesn't. Like he sat peacefully in the forest. He didn't. His brothers were not as peaceful. But he was peaceful. This is just, so he's not disturbed by it. Because there's no ego. In fact, false ego. Not that his brothers had, that's for the pastimes. Example is given is Jirakrishna. He's the example of that aspect of Krishna's personality. Of the one who is like, goal, the person, what the great man is that you want to follow, and stuff like that. All good qualities manifested nicely. So, therefore, his identity can't be disturbed. He's on the throne, you take him out of the forest, no problem. But Duryodhana, he's disturbed. Yeah. Means Yudhishthira, he's out there, the Gandharvas, let's say, the Gandharvas caught him, Duryodhana came to his rescue, and, he would be very thankful. He was a family member, you've always supported us, and this is so kind of you. Really thinks it's something I can do for you. So the relationship remains. But it wasn't like that. It was Duryodhana was caught by the Gandharvas, and on Yudhishthira's order, he was freed. And his whole existence then falls apart. And so he gives it up, goes before us, sits down, and goes into meditation, he's going to fast until death. Because his position as, an avaricious king who must in all ways, get that through, Yudhishthira and his brothers, came into question. One, he couldn't do it. And two, he's just been benefited by them, the very people these enemies with. They've just, out of their kindness, and not out of arrogance. He's a family member, right? I mean, it's just, family politics is family politics. When someone outside the family gets involved, it's like, hey, it's our family. That's the thing. It's like when you come to, those following in some way the Vedic culture, and those that are not, and I see the hurt work where, Vivekananda and others such ilk are on our side, because they're following the Vedic, traditions and stuff like that, so they're in a superior position, and you see their influence on the world. But then as soon as we come inside, the first one is right? Because if anybody who's not Sampradaya is out. Only things Vivekananda and Mahatma Gandhi. Great Indians. Professor Gita and all this. Probably right there, second, because he's talking about that American Western civilization. Right? And it was when Gandhi went to London, came back, what did he think of Western civilization? He said, I think it'd be a good idea. that's the point. They're on our side. The whole thing of he's trying to, do these things nicely and according to Gita. But then when you get in, then those who are Sampradaya are always going to be in a position better than those who are not Sampradaya. Then within Sampradaya, those who are Vaishnavas as opposed to those who are impersonals. And then those within the Sampradaya who are personalists, those that actually properly follow, who are would be called Sampradaya as opposed to those who are Alpha Sampradaya. Something like that, you can slowly come back. So even for us, those who are from Vaikuntha compared to those who go to Goloka, and then within Goloka, those in Dwarka compared to those in Vrindavan. And those in Vrindavan.
weeks.
Yeah, I'm not saying how much people intend to do that.
Religion
is a crutch and all these things, but you have, you're dependent anyway. The one where religion is the crutch, then just, you know, military power is the crutch. But that, you know, that's there. Say again?
Bodyguard.
Yeah, bodyguards, all those things. Anything. The living entity is dependent. That's the whole thing. It's just part of the, I'd say, the smoke screen that the living entity points up, pulls out to show us some ways to evolve. If you're not dependent, then you're not in status on things. So it's, the point is, there may be elements within the culture that needs independent action, not dependent on something else in the same category within the mundane sphere. But the soul is always dependent on Krishna. Then it works. That means the king is independent from the citizens, and that he is the dynamic and the dependent. But how will be a king if there's no citizens? You know, so his kingness is manifest because there's citizens. But even if there's no citizens, he's still a king by nature, right? It's just like somebody who, it's not an uncommon theme in the story that there's someone who either directly lost the kingdom, or maybe before that it was lost and were born in that mind, or appear in that mind, and someone else who knows what is the king can see that potential of being the king in them. So then the Lord says, great, you're going to have to king. And so you have the potential. So you could say he is a king, but he's only a king once he's actually on the throne with citizens. But it's the kingness is what makes it work. So that's why the qualities are important in all that. And they're necessary. But at the same time, they must manifest through something. They don't manifest through something. How do you know it's there? Right? If somebody's humble, how do you know unless a situation in which humility would be the application comes up? Then you can see the humility, otherwise you may not receive it. That's why activities are always performed, so that you can always appreciate the good qualities that are used and the devotion that's used in the activities. Right? Otherwise, how would you know it's there? That's the whole point, is then the appreciation. Rasa is based on appreciation. And Shanta Rasa was, I appreciate. Then Rasa means, I appreciate so much I want to render some service. Right? It's not fear, it's nervousness. It's out of appreciation. So like this, then it increases, it gets more intimate, it goes friendship, more intimate, around the world, so it's like that, it goes. So the basis is appreciation. How do you appreciate unless something's happened and see something to appreciate? Right? So that's why pastimes are important, otherwise how is it going to be rasa? Can't depend on it. That's why existence, for God, that's, you know, secondary. It's not so important. That's why the names, you know, he's God, Bhagavan, you know, the Lord, the greatest, most beautiful, all these different terms are considered secondary names. Because that's not what's actually important, because he is that. That's he is that, the truth, he is that. Big deal, okay? We have an arm. Yeah, so isn't that great? It's got an arm. You know, it's like that, you know, but Krishna's more interested in what happens with the arm. You know, he's very strong. You know, his figure of the arms is so great, he can do, you know, wondrous things. That's more important. Rather than you have an arm. He has a head. Wow, he has a head. Even ears and eyes. It's got a. What's this guy?
That's how you get it.
How you get it? That's why you have your mind to keep all those guys' eyes. So, yeah, so that's not so important to him. Right? He's God. Okay. What is it you appreciate because of this. So I said, yes. So that's where pastime is what's important to Krishna. So simply we're trying to understand that. So that's why the person is so much, because otherwise all we're doing is trying to establish our existence. So now we're trying to do it spiritually, but that's where we started from. The Vasudeva Sattva is how we got ourselves in here in the first place. And now we're trying to get back to Vasudeva Sattva by going back to this. So then it's progressive. Right? So Brahma Bhuta is liberation, but it's called Brahma Bhuta instead of motion because devotion is added. Right? You take moksha without the motion, it's just moksha. When you add the motion, it's called Brahma Bhuta. So it's the same place, but one is the end and the other is the beginning. Like when you get to the point of Brahma Bhuta, that's really where it starts, because then you're on the transcendental path and you're able to function. Okay. So, does that make sense? Is it something else you're going to say? I'm just thinking of this function. We could go back to finishing his point. Is that, in other words, previous these compassionate things that are there as being in the position of king and knowing how the living entity is desirous of being involved with material energy, so helping them through that, just like Krishna takes it. The living entity wants to enjoy the material world, so Krishna fulfills that. Right? So the king is basically the Lord's representative in doing that. Right? So here you have a deer who thinks it's a deer, right? It's not him in future life as Jara, you know, as the deer like that. This is a deer who thinks they're a deer. So then that's by the habit that he protects that deer. So that's a conscious decision. But in doing that, then he got somewhat tangled. His motive was not just, oh, cute little deer. No, it's, here's a soul who thinks it's a cute little deer and wants it long. Right? And so it doesn't have a lot of these here, so he'll take that position. Then most likely it would have gone on, and the deer would have grown up and gone off, and then that would have been it. It would have gone on and decided without having a life. But in worrying about the deer, that this deer is thinking it's a deer will be afraid because it's a kindness without its mother or anything like that. Therefore, we went out looking for him because he was concentrating on the deer. He made a conscious effort to go out and find him all that rather than Krishna take care. Right? So, as Krishna can take care, or as his representative, I can take care. So it's the habit of a king or even the habit of sages, they're quite kind. So therefore he's doing that. But what's being pointed out here, two things are there. One is he's no less any great soul, otherwise why is he there in the bottom top? Not just in a passing comment. Very elaborate story over many, many, many chapters. Great soul. But at the same time, they're trying to show how fine Krishna consciousness is so that we don't make the same mistake. Right? Because how many are endeavoring for pure devotional service? At the same time, they have to have families and other dependents. So they have to be very careful that they're taking care, but at the same time, not distracted. Right? Here is a pure devotee on the Uttam platform, being very kind to a deer. So why would a devotee on the Mundi platform, or definitely the Kanista platform, be kind to, you know, his dependents? But there was a subtlety there that then, you know, he must have been more thinking of the deer than a Krishna.
Actually, he really separated himself.
Say again?
He said, if the Bhagavad Gita wants to protect his deer, I should do that.
He said that. Okay, so then there's where Prabhupada's making the conscious mistake, is that no, I should protect the deer as much as I can and maintain my Krishna consciousness. You can't sacrifice that. Right? But it doesn't mean that he couldn't have been out looking for the deer and also, you know, but then fell off the cliff, then he would have found a Krishna and gone back and gotten him. Like that. But because he made that, in other words, the emotions went a little too far, right? Baba's platform of emotion, so there's a lot of emotion happening there, but then that little point was, this is a subtlety. So that's how the past there, it means he is not different from his internal potency, so that's why he gives the example. He's like playing with himself in the mirror, like a child sees himself in the mirror and he touches himself. So it's not a problem. It's there. So it's all here. But it's fully manifest. Well, here, then, it's manifest through dead matter, but still, whatever goes on is in anyway. This is energy. You know, just this is the interior manifestation of the energy. It's just a portion of the world that there is the superior manifestation. Bharata Maharaj lived for 10 million years. Take something that's solid. You know? manifests at various times. So who comes first, who comes second, doesn't matter. This kind of realm and things like that. This kind of realm will be the first time. Other times, Krishna comes first, then not.
Thank you.
form, right? It's just like, if you were to eat butter, you just pick it up and stuff in your mouth. Huh? Oh, okay, so you're still in the, small kids do that. But generally, if you want to eat butter, then you find something to put it on, right? You know, you get, you know, chapati or some rice or, you know, something, and then you, you know, melt as much of it as possible onto it. So the point is, this penance is, what are you going to be doing when you kind of have to contemplate? How are you going to stand there for 6 months in one position, not moving, not breathing, not eating, not, you know, anything, without thinking about something? So the whole point is ultimately you're simply trying to correct the consciousness. And that's why knowledge and contemplation is so important. But it's more important that the penance is actually active than not active. By standing in toes is not really doing something. That's why it's saying the best penance for a mom is studying and teaching. Right? For a shot of protection. Do those things anyway, you'll be having austerity. You know, times when you're teaching, you're studying, that you miss sleep, or miss meal, or something like that. When you're protecting, you're always going to be, you know, some austerity. You may be going to the bathroom, or some of these are doing business. So many times when you put extra time or extra energy, you miss out on your regular day-to-day life. And assisting others is when they need the assistance.
Experience of sensation. enters that. So we receive that. So he says, I have a taste of water. Right? Because you're drinking the water, and you're thirsty, and that experience that this is good, it's nice, that experience is Krishna. It's not the water. But Krishna has said that that experience is good water coming in contact with you, and you know, being drunk or thirsty. So it's the meanings of wish. So the unlimited varieties of experiences you get all come through the different meanings of interaction. Remember this variety, that's why the pastimes are so varied. Right? The rules are varied, the different duties are varied, because then different things come up, right? And that day is nice, but night also then. And then the sun in between them. Being in the house is one experience, being outside the house is another experience. Right? Women are one experience. Okay, in general, but then within that you have daughters, wives, and wives, and then friends and sisters. And so it's all variety within the same thing. You know, and then you have sisters, you have older sisters, you have younger sisters. So older sister is sister, is friend, and that same thing like mother. Younger sister is friend like daughter. So all this variety is all there for you. That's the medium through which that experience is gained. That's Krishna. It's not something else. It's not your tongue, it's not the makeup. That's Krishna. But as you see there, that is desire. That's Krishna. So if you see that in the time and you start to see Krishna, then there won't be distracted by the makeup. Different. So it becomes a way to liberate yourself. That's why it has twice the purpose. You eat your way back to God, because you see Krishna in it. And it can't get better than that. Because the pervasive is the super soul. He's there as the super soul, but it's his potency is there. Basically, he's pervading it as universal form, as Garbhodaksha Vishnu. But then he also enters into super soul. So you won't just say, oh, it's just potency, so he's near his health. So basically you just can't get away from the fact that, you know, you gotta address the top element of God, you know, that you can't get away from that. You can't, nothing happens without that. So then all these things start to fade, and they don't make it. If you understand this point, then all the jumping up and down over what somebody has done doesn't have really much meaning. There's that. Oh, this one did this nonsense. There it is. But it doesn't matter because it's all illusion. They think it's nonsense. I mean, they think it's good. That's just the nonsense. That's Krishna. That is not nonsense. Then about what could be, what aspect of Krishna that there are when he refers to as not. That is what. It's like, why would we take my guru and we take the local? So why would we take the mundane and we can take the spiritual? So as long as the mundane is important for you, you deal with it. Try to see Krishna, and as soon as you don't have the need, there's no longer need to deal with it. So I guess it's valuable to you, it's not so valuable to Krishna. The interaction with you, that's valuable to Krishna. So Krishna is still interacting with you and having pastimes with you anyway, despite us not seeing him now. That's the platform of Jnana.
That's the first one.
Huh?
That's the first one.
No, it's not. It's Krishna.
He responds to the first one.
He responds to the very first one. He has come as the taste that you're looking for. You can't get better than that.
First one means responding as a person with his voice.
But that's because if you want that, you respond that way. But you don't. You want to go in there and there's a stone there and dress it very nice, and you want to offer your prayers and just want to get done. You don't want to resolve. In other words, you're sitting here right now. What if Krishna walked in that door right now? What would you do? Think about it. Well, I'd offer my obeisances. Then? What would you do? Say again.
Prabhupada keep elevated up and they keep trying to go.